Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
All right, this podcast is part of the More Than Baseball organization. More Than Baseball is working daily to better the lives of minor leaguers all over baseball. Our mission is to protect and enhance the future of our game by allowing every ball player to live a better life during and after their careers. They have a lot of programs, including financial guidance, education, mental health, and more. Check them out at morethanbaseball.org. Also, check out Advocates for Minor Leaguers. They're doing a great job as well. Super excited for my guest today, a player in the Angels organization, originally drafted by the Twins in the 4th round. Is that good? Before his injury, he was absolutely tearing it up for the Angels in Double A. Mr. 121 himself, Trey Cabbage. How's it going, brother?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing well. And what? How is that for an introduction? Probably one of the most electric introductions, you know, that you've for any podcast that you've been on so far.
Yeah, that was that tops it. That's definitely at the top of the list.
For sure, for sure. So, before we got on, you were talking about your rehab. How's that going? How's everything been for you?
It's been all right. It's been slow. It's taught me patience, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. The last visit didn't go exactly how we wanted. So still doing one-handed swings. Haven't got to build up to using the left yet, but we're doing good. Everything feels strong. There's no pain in it. It seems like it's doing pretty well. Still getting to work out every other part of my body. So I'm getting to do a lot of stuff. Like I'm still throwing, running, and lifting and stuff like that. So it's been good, man. It's basically, obviously, I'd love to be playing. I'd rather be doing that. But the rest of my body is healed up, and I'll be ready to go when the arm's ready.
How do you stay mentally strong during this time? Because obviously, you see the season still going on. You always want to be out there with the boys. Like, how do you stay mentally strong and like through this kind of experience?
Just praying a ton, staying close to Christ, staying close to the teammates. Like, I talked to Braxton, Tori, Whitefield, Palmero, JJ, our clubby Nick. I aggravate Coleman every now and then. So, like, we're talking a lot throughout the days of the week just to kind of stay close. Because, like, if you just aren't really connected to the guys that you go to battle with, then you kind of start to feel the distance of how far you are away in Arizona. And then how far you are away, like when I was hurt, as the process was going forward, it's like I'm looking months down the road. But like when you talk to the guys, it's, you still at least get to have a little fellowship and camaraderie.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Brax. I had him on a few months ago. He's my guy. I saw him tweet about you a couple of times, or maybe it was on his Instagram. So I had to get you on. Let's talk about him. Is he probably one of the best teammates you've ever had? Because he is literally one of the down to earth guy.
Yeah, he's such a good dude. We were locker buddies all the time, like right next to each other. And then like in spring training, I'd either be in his clubhouse or he'd be in ours. So it was, it was good. He's one of my best friends, and we aggravate each other all the time. So it was pretty cool being 3-4 combo there for a bit. So.
Yeah, and you mentioned you aggravate him. I had, like I told you when I had messaged you earlier, I said I got to get some, the inside scoop on you. What's some good Trey stories here. And he wanted me to ask you about the times that you would squirt, I don't know, is it Mio? Was that how it was called? That Mio, yeah. In his water. So just to make him mad and piss him off during the games. Like, what was that all about?
Because I'm a goober, I'm a clown. So Braxton is one of these the Hydro Flasks. Like,
okay,
he's got one, but it doesn't have like the straw lid or whatever. So like, it was kind of hard to get away with it because I had to unscrew the cap all the way down, and then I had to like put it back on and shake it up. But I, like, he would normally, he would just regularly have water in there from the cooler instead of going to get a cup every time. He thinks he's a big shot, and he got himself a Hydro Flask. But so to get him back, I was aggravating somebody else. Like, look at this guy, he brings out this flask. So I used to like throw either drip drops or right stuff packets or anything like electrolyte in my water. And sometimes I'll get bored of just drinking all that. So I want a little extra flavor. So I'd buy the Mio's or like powdered Kool-Aid. Mio was just more convenient. So like he'd go up to the plate or whatever, and I'm just sitting there coming back, and I would get myself a cup of water and fill it up with Mio. So I, one of these days I just like looked over and I was like, watch this. Walked over there, sprayed a bunch of Mio on his, because like him going up expecting water, like I was like watching him until he went over and grabbed it again. And I saw him turn it up and just go. And he's like looking around the dugout. And of course, I'm just there like losing it in the corner. And he said, what is this? So, and then from then on, I probably did it a half a dozen more times. So
that's awesome. But you had to do that just to kind of knock him down a little bit. He's getting a little full of himself, you know, with his fancy bougie water bottle over there.
Exactly. It was to knock him down a little bit, but it's also to cool him off sometimes. Guy's emotional. I love playing with him. So,
yeah.
But yeah, we like to keep it light in there, man. That's the thing. This is a tough game. So we all, you know, whether it was me and him doing that stuff, we all having handshakes with everybody. Like his is, he just gives everybody a hug because he's a big bear. So, I mean, we had a good clubhouse, but yeah, we used to go at each other. That's hilarious.
Yeah, no, for sure. And speaking of the clubhouse, obviously that the AA teams, they're playing very well. They, you know, always got the playoff spot all set up and everything. In that locker room, like who's like the guy, like the maybe who keeps it loose for the boys? Maybe maybe it's you or it was you. Maybe it's Braxton. Who kind of keeps it light in the clubhouse?
That's hard to round up. You got guys like Dashwood. You got guys like we all just Coleman was the youngest pitcher and the little guy, so we'd all aggravate him, call him Squirt and stuff like that. So we'd get him riled up, and he would get guys going. You got Torrey Hunter Jr.'s in there. He's always dancing and playing music. Palmero's the salty vet, so he's like taking jabs and everything like that. So like everybody's all like that was one of the tightest clubhouses I've ever been. So you get Gomez and Soto start dancing in the clubhouse too. So it was a fun group.
For sure. Did you ever meet Ryan Smith? I know, or did you ever play with him? I know he's a pitcher in the I think he's in AAA now, but I think he was in AA last season.
I believe I met him in spring training.
We definitely crossed paths,
but I think I met him once.
Okay, because this is your first year with the Angels organization, right?
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah, he's a friend of the show. Also, he's he went from low A to AAA in one season last year. That guy's insane. Hopefully he makes it to the show very soon, but he's a really good guy. So you mentioned that, you know, you're rehabbing and all that. You're not a gamer. Like, I'm a huge gamer. Like, I'll get down, you know, a little Warzone, a little Fortnite, whatever it may be. I'm not too good at the show, I'll be honest. Like, I cannot figure that out. But you mentioned that you cook. Like, what kind of meals are you cooking? Like, what are you making?
Well, kind of just, I'm pretty much a meat and taters kind of guy. I'm from the South. I mean, if I get lost, if I can just mail me back over here in Tennessee. So I've got some kind of either red meat or white meat chicken. Like last night we did pork chops, night before that steaks. Tonight I've got whole chicken wings I'm going to grill. We'll grill up, fry up, asparagus, baked potatoes, you know, all that stuff like that. And then, of course, breakfast is easy. Just flipping up some sausage, bacon, make some pancakes or something like that. But yeah, I've been hanging out with another one of the rehab guys, John Swanda, and I aggravate him saying he's a little bit of a hippie, but he's always got the newest, healthiest stuff, or maybe not the newest, whatever, but like he's got his ways, and I'm just trying to learn because like you got to fuel yourself, man. There's a difference between fueling and feeding, and like as long a year as we have and as much as we put our bodies through, you got to put the best stuff in there.
Yeah, and you mentioned like food and whatnot, and I think another huge thing is the housing. I know this season with the new rules, there's been a change in housing and whatnot. I know, I think here in Love, oh man, I'm going to butcher his last name, Love Grove. I think he was on the Pandas last season. He kind of was on, he's with Advocate for Minor Leaguers, and they were making a big push for like the housing for minor leaguers and stuff. How is the housing like now? Like, is it?
It's doing okay. They've done a pretty good job with it. It's, you know, it's serviceable. But give you
Yeah. Because, I mean, you've been in the minors before for a while. I'm sure you've had stories, and I'm going to get to that in a little bit. I want to talk about it because I love talking about minor league stories and the experiences and all that. But one thing that came out today, I actually want to talk to you about it. It just kind of popped up in my head here. Did you see what Rob Manfred had mentioned about minor league wages?
Yeah. Not going to sewer myself here, but my thought was – we don't make very much money. We could do better. So that's all I'll say.
Yeah, no, I respect that. I respect that. So let's get into your history. Like, when did you start playing baseball?
Oh yeah. From what I can tell, it was before I can remember. My parents said as soon as I was walking, I had like one of the little squishy bats, and they were like rolling me on the floor, and I would hit it. So, I mean, there's always a funny story they tell that the rumor and the joke of it was they slipped some money under the table when I was signing up for T-ball because you had to be four, but my birthday wasn't until May. So at the April tryouts, my parents were slipping money under the table to get me in as a young kid. So all my life, basically.
A two sport athlete or multiple sports? It was baseball from pretty much like, this is what you're going to do.
No, my parents wanted me to be an athlete. They didn't want me just to be a baseball player. So, I played football when I was real young. I played basketball from the time I was in fifth grade all the way up. I ran track and did field events when I was in middle school. And of course everybody tried all the other stuff. Like I tried to kick a soccer ball around a little bit, just see if I could do that. But we were always out in the yard doing something and playing just to train your body to be adaptable to other sports and other movements, when realistically all I thought I was doing was being a kid and playing. But that's what my parents always aggravated me. Said, yeah, we were training you for a young age. We've just playing out in the yard.
Yeah. And I feel like nowadays, obviously with technology and stuff, like kids just being out there playing in the yard, it's something that's kind of going away. And I can get on the soapbox and talk about that, all that, So when did you focus? Sorry, say again.
I said, I'm glad I grew up when I did. I was out in the yard all the times. I was before the technology.
Yeah, and you grew up in Tennessee, you said?
Yeah.
So what was the baseball scene like? Like the high school, like was your team pretty good?
We were pretty good for our conference, for our district. We never made it out of the regions. Always got beat in the first round. But we were pretty good. Those were fun memories.
Yeah. I don't know much about Tennessee, like baseball wise. Like, is there a lot of talent in Tennessee? Because, like, I'm in Wisconsin, and, like, our talent is – we have good talent, but it's not as much as, like, the Florida, the Texas, the Californias and all that.
Yeah, it's not as widespread as Florida, Texas, California and all that stuff. It's more located, pretty much in Nashville. There's some pretty decent talent out in West Tennessee, I've heard. Knoxville's pretty good, too, but it's just, like, the major cities out through there. Chattanooga's probably got some pretty good talent, but I really didn't play much in Tennessee when I was in high school. After I would go play school ball there, but I would play in Atlanta.
Oh, so was it just how did that work out? Like, did you know people out there, or that was just like the team you signed up for?
No, we had played against the Georgia Roadrunners all like growing up as kids, and they were going to give us a good opportunity to get some exposure and get in front of coaches and scouts and stuff like that. So obviously that was the best option moving forward and going into the future. So, once I was I think my freshman year, I played in Tennessee. And then after that, I went down there.
That's awesome. So then when did you focus pretty much on baseball? And because I mean, I've talked to guys who are like, yeah, I played basketball until I got dunked on. And then I'm like, I realized this is not for me. And I focused straight up on baseball and whatnot. Like, when did you decide like baseball is going to be like my path moving forward?
Well, I was dunking on people all the way until I was a senior. So baseball was only the solo sport when I got drafted. Like, I played all the way up through high school with basketball.
Okay. So, obviously you got drafted out of high school. The college visits, were you committed or like interested in, potentially going anywhere else? Obviously the scouts were probably looking at you and, trying to recruit you and whatnot, but, how was that whole process for you?
I committed so early. Like, I didn't get the full experience, I guess you'd say, because at that time, like, I think it was coaches couldn't talk to you before July 1st, but you could talk to them if you follow. Like, I could reach out to them through email or phone call.
You had to initiate the process?
Right. I don't think we could text. I don't think they can text us, but we can text them. They can answer questions and stuff like that until like the July 1st of going into your senior year. And so where I committed super early, I basically had just been in contact with schools. Like I talked to Samford. I talked to Lipscomb, I think, maybe. A couple junior colleges, and then Tennessee. So, like, once I got the Tennessee offer, my parents were ecstatic, and like, obviously, being right there at UT, like, I just went for the offer and committed early.
Yeah. So, like, were you like a sophomore or junior? When did you commit? Because now kids are committing like so early nowadays. It feels like.
Yeah, I committed like in August of my junior year.
Okay, so then heading into Tennessee, back in high school, after committing to a pretty major, university and whatnot, like, were you pretty much one of the big guys on campus?
We didn't really have that many people on campus. We didn't have that many students, but yeah, it was pretty exciting to, it was kind of funny. No, I tried to not make it really a big deal. Every time we would go play other teams in baseball, there was always like chirps and chants about it. And I was just like, all right, whatever. So I think I got more recognition from other people. Because in my high school, I tried to just kind of act like me.
Yeah. So other high schools or whatnot, they were chirping you as like, hey, there's that Tennessee commit or whatnot.
Oh, yeah. I was pitching one game and I don't even remember what school it was. But they were like, as I was like going through the windup, getting my signs, they were going UT. Like, so it was fun because I think we shut them out that day. But like I would get certain chants like that and they would be chirping and stuff like that. So
were you committed as a two way or strictly because you mentioned you were pitching.
I was committed as a hitter, but okay. I told them I wanted to at least give it a shot to pitch. But like, I honestly made it to campus like twice. I went on an official visit, and then I never went back.
Yeah, how was the official visit? Because I mean, obviously, I've heard stories of going hanging out with the guys and whatnot. Like, how was that visit?
It was fun. So I mean, you're 18, you go to a college party. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Like, it wasn't really my scene. Mm-hmm. So I stood and kind of watched TV leaning against the wall at one point. And the guy who hosted me was Christian Stewart, actually.
Okay.
And he comes over and he goes, hey, man, like, not to be weird or anything, but you're kind of making everybody nervous. You want to at least come sit on the couch or something? So I went and sat, and we were just sitting there watching TV, but I didn't really talk to anybody at that part. But I mean, obviously, when they take you to the football stadium, they feed you, you go take pictures and stuff like that. It's unbelievable. So,
yeah, and that's a great school to go to. I mean, obviously, a good baseball program, history, and all that. So, but you didn't go. You get drafted instead. And again, like, you got drafted pretty high. Like, heading into draft, obviously you're committed and whatnot. Like, did you, like, were you expecting to get drafted that high? Or was that kind of a surprise to you?
No, I had talked to my advisor at the time, my agent now, and me and Al, we kind of had a pretty good idea where I was going to go. It was within about three or four picks of where I was. So, we had a pretty good idea going in. We watched the first day. There was like a long shot luck that I might have got picked on the first day. But we also watched it because I had a lot of buddies that I'd played with or against that were getting drafted. So that was pretty cool. But I knew I was going to go on the second day. So we just kind of turned the iPad on and listened to the stream as it got close to those picks.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned you had a couple guys who might have gone high. Like, were those guys you played with in Georgia or Tennessee?
Yeah, it was the guys that I played. I knew a few guys that I'd played against, but like Jamai Jones, Michael Curry was in my high school class, so we didn't, he might have got picked. We're looking at Kobe Vance, another one of my buddies who's with the Red Sox, Cole Cottom. So like, mm-hmm. a lot of guys that we played with and against, we were looking for their name and stuff like that just to see, just see your guys go. That's awesome.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, support the guys and whatnot. Was there like a certain round where, like, if you got picked, you're like, look, I'm going to Tennessee, obviously.
Probably the fifth.
Okay. So you kind of squeaked by.
Yeah, I squeaked by. I was going to make sure that I got my number and I got my, I wanted to go above the fifth. I wanted to be a priority.
So. Yeah. No, and that's a good point because like I've had guys, like I've talked to guys who, maybe weren't drafted as high. And like you said, to your point, like being a priority, like they, you know, they're like, I outplayed second round picks. I outplayed first round picks, but never got, you know, advanced to, they probably got as high as double A or triple A, but they were never that priority. So, you know, and that's kind of like the whole politics of the minor leagues, which is just kind of part of the game, you know, whether it's right or wrong, that's just kind of the way it is. So that's, to your point, I understand that. Did you have a draft party? Like, what was you mentioned the iPad and whatnot. Like, did you have anyone over, some friends or not?
I think I went out with one of my buddies and I brought Mike. We went on basically a double date, and I think that was pretty much it.
Okay.
Nothing big.
So. All right. Well, all right. So this is a true circle, obviously. What was the biggest or maybe like one of the first dumb purchases you bought? Because you obviously got a little bit of money, signing bonus and whatnot. What was that first thing you bought where you look back like, oh man, like, did I need that? Or maybe it was just like a car or something.
No, I definitely bought a truck. I wanted, like, my pops had a Chevy pickup when I was younger. So I went and bought a truck. And honestly, other than my tattoos, that was the first, and I think the only purchase that I made over $1,000 since then.
Wow. Like, I that's good. Obviously, that's good. I've talked to guys who were like, yeah, you know, how to get me a chain, how to do this. I'm like, all right, I respect that, you know, but I mean, I don't.
$150.
There you go. But you obviously got the truck, and like I seen, you know, your Instagram posts and whatnot. You know, credit to me for doing the research and all. But yeah, you look like the guy who would rock around in a or ride around in a truck. You know, just based off, you know, outward appearances, yeah, and all that.
My pops had a Chevy when I was younger, and so once I get settled, I want to buy a bench seat like he had.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to get me my pickup and everything like that. But pretty much, we're frugal, my family, so mm-hmm. I didn't really do too much after that. So my parents would say my first dumb purchase was all the tattoos.
How many do you got?
I've got 9 right now.
Okay.
I'm going to get them finished at some point because the scar is just right through the middle right there. So
yeah.
I'm going to eventually cover it up and probably touch up some stuff and maybe even redo. So
how many of those did you get like right after your bonus then? Like how many did you have any before that? Or was that when you got them all or most of them?
I think I waited a year or so. Okay. I think I was Instructs 2016 or something like that. Yeah, I didn't hardly spend any money that first year. I was just nervous. So, yeah. But yeah, I think I got them in 2016 when I started. I got my first one here on my wrist. So
very cool. And I have none, but just it's always kind of, you know, makes me curious and whatnot. Like, do they all have like specific meanings, or is it just like, oh, that looks kind of cool. I'm gonna grab that.
So the right here, my favorite scripture, it's an eagle, and it's Isaiah 40:31. It's made them run and not grow weary.
Sure.
Grow up sprouting, fly with wings like eagles. And then here, there's God is greater than the ups and downs. Okay. It's Calvary's mountain with 3 crosses. I know you probably can't see it because of the light, but I've got, obviously, Tennessee. In here is Philippians 4:13. Up here is a cross with a Trinity symbol for the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. Sure. With rays come up like sun rays and heaven, mm-hmm, and light coming down, and below it are pine trees, because as in the off season where I live in Atlanta now, I would drive down from my parents' house, and like about the time I'd be going through North Georgia was like sunset, so like you'd be seeing the sunlight come through the pine tree. So I just kind of always thought it was beautiful, so I put it, yeah, on my arm.
That's awesome. And you mentioned your faith, and like I respect that. Like I grew up in church and went on myself. How hard is that to be like a professional athlete and still, because obviously like especially baseball, when you're like every Sunday and every day pretty much you're playing, like, I mean, how hard is it for you to like maintain that like faith and stay rooted?
I mean, it's tough, man. The devil's working all the time. Like some days you're just, I'm tired. I don't want to get up and go to church, or I don't want to go to chapel. I meditate before every game. So I go like take a nap, or I meditate and stuff like that. So I'll have my prayer time there, and I'll catch myself sometimes. Like I just got out of the cage, like chapel starts in like 10 minutes. But like, if I just lay here and pray, like that'll count. Right. And just those little things, it gets tough. Like, you know, like you said, the devil works hard. There's temptations, like it, you know, it's tough to stay strong, but you just got to lean close to him and draw near to him and seek his face, and
yeah,
he'll bless you.
No, I respect that. You mentioned chapel. Like, does each team like have a chapel or like a chaplain, or how does that work out?
Yeah. So baseball chapel works with minor league baseball to have a chaplain for each team.
Interesting.
So even down here in the ACL and rehab for us, We've got one. They've got one in all the A ball, you know, all the way up to the big leagues.
I had no idea about that. That's awesome. Do a lot of players go to that, or is it kind of like, I mean, I'm sure every team's different, but like it's,
I mean, it's 50-50. Okay. In Rocket City, we had a lot. Good. We had a lot of guys come to it. I've been on teams where there wasn't much interest, you know, so it's different. Like, and sometimes got, you know, the chaplain's words will click with somebody and not with somebody else. Like I've been to some where I didn't understand all of it. And then there's been some that I came out of it and it was, you know, it was huge. It was amazing. So, but no, we in Rocket City, we had a pretty good amount. Wichita, we had a pretty good amount. Further back, I think we had a few and we had a pretty good amount in Cedar Rapids. I'm trying to remember, mm-hmm. but no, it's usually about 50-50 of guys will come to it.
Yeah. Awesome. That's great. Like I said, I had no idea they had chaplains and all that in the minors. That's incredible. So let's talk about the minors. You get drafted out of high school. Did anything prepare you for life in the minors? Because we, and I say this like all the time on my podcast, we all see the finished product, the major leaguer, the Mike Trouts. I guess probably he's probably a bad example because his time in the minors is very limited. But you know what I'm saying? Like the guys in the majors, and we don't really see the path that they take, the grind, the struggle, the bus rides, the hotels and all that. So I like to kind of reflect and talk about that experience. I say it's funny because you're a professional athlete and you're going through things that you shouldn't have to go through. In the grand scheme of it, it's really not that funny. But like I said, this is an off the field podcast. I'm not really a big stats guy, but like, do you have any interesting, funny minor league stories of where if you try to explain to somebody who's out of baseball, they're just looking at you like, what are you talking about? Aren't you a professional athlete?
Yeah. Man, probably too many to count. The showers are always funny because sometimes you'll just get like a head of a water hose and it's not even like a spray shower. It'll just be like pretty much just pushing out water, or you'll get the ones that are like really sharp coming out. It's almost like a little flat pattern. Like you were shooting a,
water gun.
Yeah. Something like that. Shoot. We've had meals show up raw. And, you know, and there's also other good times, like when mm-hmm. you have like major league guys come in and rehab, like they'll usually take care of you with spread. You get to learn a lot from those guys. You make some of the, you know, the greatest friends that you'll have in your life through the grind. Because mm-hmm. that's, you go through more during a season than you really can imagine. Like every year's got something that's a high moment and a low moment. So, I'd say the thing that prepared me the most was when I played in Georgia when I was in high school, because I lived down there. Mm-hmm. I lived with a bunch of teammates, so it was just kind of like a little preliminary idea for it. So you're around your teammates all the time. Travel was tough and stuff like that, but the minor leagues is, it's something else. That's for sure.
No, absolutely. And you talk about major leaguers coming and making their like rehab starts. I was just talking to David Griffin. He was one of the Mets minor leaguers when Scherzer came and bought them all AirPods and hooked them up with a bunch of really good food and, you know, stuff like that. So like when that experience comes, obviously he was telling me he's a pitcher as well, and he was able to pick, not really pick his brain because it's Max Scherzer, you know, you kind of just let him do his thing. But like he was very just observant of everything he did, like pregame, like after the game and all that. So that's you always hear about the stories of that. Have you ever gotten off the bus and you just looked around and you're like, where in the world am I? I'm in the middle of nowhere. There's like a Subway and maybe a Dollar General or something.
Yeah, that happened a few times in the Appy League, way back in 2016 when I was in Elizabeth. And, when we got to Amarillo last year, the hotel was like 20 minutes from the stadium, and it's pretty much out in the middle of nowhere. It was a Slim Chickens and a gas station and a Red Light. And not far from where we were, like the city would pick up, but we were just like on the outskirts where it hadn't developed yet. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's been a few times, like Clinton, Iowa looks like it's stuck in the 60s. So it's just funny the places that you'll see and travel to.
Did you play in the, I'm trying to think, your low A and high A, did you play in the West, I guess the new low A Central, I think it is?
Yeah, I played in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. So it was the Midwest.
Okay. So did you get a trip to Beloit then?
I did. I never made it to the new stadium. I was like, I spent parts of four seasons in that league.
Yeah.
17, 19, and 21. Because in 21, it became high A.
Yep.
And like it is. So I finally got out of there and went to Fort Myers in 2019. Then COVID happens, obviously. We're just glad to be playing again.
Yeah.
We come back to 2021 and we're in spring training and they're like, you're going back to Cedar Rapids. It was high, happy with it, but it was like, I'm going back again.
Yeah.
So I think I'm like in the top four of games spent in that uniform. I'm one of four guys who have been in that, played for the Cedar Rapids Cardinals for four different seasons. So I used to aggravate my manager, Brian Dinkelman, and I was like, Dink, man, I've been here so long. When's my statue going up?
Mm-hmm.
And he coached there since 2016 and lives there. And he said, right after mine.
Yeah.
So we used to aggravate him about that. But yeah, sorry. Went off on a tangent.
No, you're good.
There. But yeah, I went to Beloit. Beloit was something else. I didn't mind it too bad because I played really well there. So the only problem I had with it, like the clubhouse was tough, but like walking through the crowd to go to the clubhouse was annoying.
Yeah. I've been there a couple of times. I live about 45 minutes or so. The new stadium is beautiful. Like, but I mean, the old stadium, it was like I was there and you would see like the players walk past everybody to get into like the field and whatnot. That's kind of rough being a player, especially after the game when they got to leave too.
Imagine fun having to walk by those guys.
Yeah, no, for sure, absolutely. In minor leagues, the fans in minor league stadiums are no joke. I mean, they can get on you sometimes. But I've talked to guys who have told me like that's one of the worst. Like when I ask them, like, you know, where's the worst stadium you've ever played or the worst city you've ever been in? Like Beloit's easily like the one or two, yeah, like number one answer that I get all the time. And I've talked to guys who play there as their home stadium. I'm like, hey, is that kind of an advantage, you know, knowing that everyone has to come and deal with the low lights and like there's no radar gun and like the visiting locker room. From what I was told is like either like really old carpet or just like dirt. Like I've heard a couple different variations of it, but like it's, one guy said his locker room was like basically in the like the bathroom area. Like he didn't even have like a locker. It was just like a little bench in like right next to the showers, yeah, and stuff.
About so small, some guys they'd put there's a bench in the shower and they put guys like right next to it.
Jeez.
At the end of the games, so the water rushing out of the shower wouldn't soak your bag.
Yeah,
but yeah, say Beloit's number one. Clinton, I was 1A, not a 2. It's that close.
Wow, and that was your home stadium. Like, how was it playing there? Because obviously, like Iowa's not the like. I mean, what I don't know what they're.
I played in Cedar Rapids.
Oh, sorry. See, so what is there to do in Iowa? Like when you get there, because like it, obviously like Beloit's kind of in the middle of nowhere. Like, what would you guys do? Like when you were playing? Yeah.
We honestly, you're there to play, so yeah. I'm one of the weird guys. I like for a 6:35 game, I'd show up at 10 o'clock to the stadium, 10:30 to the stadium, eat, do some like warm up stuff, get in the hot tub, and lift like early in the morning and have pretty much all day at the stadium. And then I would stay there, watch TV, play some cards, have a few beers after the game before I went home. And I probably wouldn't leave the stadium until midnight or 12:30. So I didn't really have much time outside of like off days, but off days we would go fishing, we would golf, we'd go get something to eat. We'd try out a couple breweries, you know, stuff like that. So.
Yeah, for sure. What was maybe your favorite city to play in then? Since you obviously mentioned some of your worst, but like, what was maybe that one city that you're like, I cannot wait to go there. It's, you know, it's maybe a little bit more busy or whatever it may be.
In the Midwest League or what?
Just in general.
Yeah. Wichita was fun. Wichita was my home stadium last year. I loved playing there. I liked the trip we took to Amarillo, the stadium wise.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to think of a city that was fun. We, Northwest Arkansas was good. It's right there at the University of Arkansas's campus.
Sure.
It was pretty fun. But like I said, we don't have cars on the road, so it's kind of tough to do anything like that. But any place that would draw fans was fun to go to. Dayton, in the Midwest League, Dayton was fun to go to. They always packed it out. So,
is Dayton, are they still a minor league team or no?
Yeah, they're the Dayton Dragons. High for the Reds.
Oh, they are? Oh, they are? Okay. I thought, I was sure if they went in, Indy or AA or something, but okay. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
I think maybe Daytona. No, Daytona's in low A still. They're good. I don't know who they banged, but they banged a few teams.
It was the whole reshuffling and whatnot. Manfred doing his thing. So you mentioned like fans and whatnot. Like, have you had any interesting fan interactions? Because like, I mean, I've had guys tell me like fans have made them like a replica out of like metal, like, and put their the ice cream scoops, you know, the helmets, put it on there, and they put a picture of the, just random things that they've done for them and stuff. Like, have you, or maybe they chirped you a little bit?
I, of course, with the last name Cabbage, I get a lot. I remember one year, every time I played at this one stadium in, it was actually in Wisconsin. It was the Timber Rats. So normally the seventh hitter in the lineup was the sauerkraut something something K-man. Well, no matter where I was in the lineup, sauerkraut being Cabbage, I was the sauerkraut K-man. I could have been leading off or I could have been hitting. They would find me. Because I asked them, I was like, why is it always me? It was like, it's easy. Normally it's the seven guy, but this one's just easy. They would always hammer me with stuff like that. And this year in Rocket City, some lady had like Cabbage pom-poms and that she would bring the games and everything like that. I would get Cabbage Patch, all that stuff. So people chant sauerkraut behind the plate, radish, lettuce, other stuff.
Yeah. You know, fans can be brutal, especially in the minors, like where, like I said, like have you ever been like the strikeout or what is like the strikeout batter or is that the same thing as the Cabbage batter in
the K-man was the strikeout batter. Yeah.
Oh, the K. Okay. Okay. Yeah. For some reason I heard caveman and I'm like, man, maybe it's a Wisconsin thing. I don't know. Okay.
No. Yeah. The sauerkraut strikeout batter. Yeah.
Okay. Sure. All right. So no matter where you were, just because of your last name, they would put you there. That's incredible. Hey, fans in the minor leagues, they can be pretty brutal. When you're not on the field, you're not obviously sending out a game. You're like, what do you do like for fun?
In Rocket City, I kind of just toured around, found new places like coffee shops, restaurants. Mm-hmm. I went to a place called, I think it's like Campus 805 or something like that. Had a few different breweries, wineries in there, something like that. Here, I just kind of take hikes, go walk around places, just explore is pretty much what I do. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like being here in the hottest place in the world feels like I go to the pool a lot, chill out like that. actually, Thursday, we have a day off from rehab. So I think I'm going to hop over and hike Camelback Mountain, stuff like that. Just try to have experiences. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And so what is the everyday like schedule for rehabbing? Because obviously everything's different. What have you injured?
Yeah. I had a broken radius, compound fracture. I got a plate and six screws in my arm.
So, like, what is your just like everyday like routine for like rehab and all that?
Right now, with the All-Star break, the ACL guys aren't coming in, so we go in a little bit earlier just to get everybody out of there quicker. The trainers, the clubbies, us. when they show up and start playing again on Thursday, we will be pushed back again. I'll show up middle of the day. I'll go in, I usually hot tub, eat, foam roll, stretch, do some activation stuff. I'll do arm care for this side. About that time, I'll go out and stretch. We'll have some kind of conditioning, whether it's sprints, 5-10-5s, snake runs or something like that. I'll hop over to the cage, do my one-handed swings, cage routine as much as I can. Sometimes I'll throw, just depends on before I hit. Depends on what day it is. And then I've got a lift of either upper body, core, or lower body to do before I head out. Usually get some treat twice a week, stuff like that. But
so when do you expect to be fully, like, good to go? Like, obviously, the season's probably do you think you'll be able to make it back by the end of the season or no?
Making it back for the playoffs was a stretch. Okay. So we're thinking I'm just going to try to be healthy, get some at-bats and instructs, maybe – hopefully, might play in the fall league. I have no idea, but I'm going to, try to have that conversation, make up some at-bats. And then I'm also going to try to play winter ball too.
Oh, nice. Have you played winter ball before or no?
I've not. No, I'd like to play in the Dominican. I know that's top tier talent. Mm-hmm. So if I got it, it'd be a good competition and stuff like that. I've also thought about Puerto Rico.
Yeah. My dad was born in Puerto Rico. A lot of, when you think about, Puerto Rico, Dominican, ton of good talent. You just look at like the home run derby, the All-Star game. There's a ton of talent coming out of those countries and stuff. One thing I want to talk to you about, you've made your jump instruct low A, high A. You've been to pretty much every level now. What was like the hardest jump from one level to the other? Was it like high A to double A or double A to triple A?
I would say probably low A to high was probably the biggest jump for me. because I had a double A jump last year. I had a short stint for a couple, like three games or something like that. Got a couple hits and got sent back down because of the COVID thing. And I went back at high and I played like six more weeks and I got really comfortable there. I think I was just kind of pissed. So I got really comfortable, like settled into a groove. And then when I came back to Wichita, I was able to keep it on rolling and stuff like that. But I remember in 2019, when I went from low A to high, it took me a bit to catch up. Mm-hmm. Felt like everybody in the Florida State League threw a billion.
Yeah. And like, it was Florida State, that was that your, was that the high A?
That was high A in 2019.
That was with the Twins organization.
Yes.
Okay. So like we talked about fans and all that, like what is the craziest thing a fan has asked you to sign? Cause I've got foreheads, random things. Like what is the craziest thing someone has asked you to sign for them?
Yeah. This is probably going to be I'll be the only one in this category. This lady had cabbage pom-poms. There were pom-poms that were like actual cabbages and everything. Yeah. Like they were fake obviously, but I signed those. It's the one thing that I've never understood is when kids ask you to sign their phone case.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause I mean, they're going to get a new one anyway. They're not going to, or you'll wash off or.
Yeah. Or it's just like, I get it. If you, like you said, Mike Trout earlier, if you go get Mike Trout to sign your phone case, like,
it's
awesome.
It's framed. Yeah.
Heck yeah. But like, you know, just especially like kids when I was in low A, like, hey, like number 25, can you sign my phone? And I'm just like, you don't even know my name.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just one of the things I was just always curious about, like why. But I guess that's the only thing they had, and we just happened to be there signing stuff. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I've got like just arms, t-shirts, obviously, or normal hats, baseballs, stuff like that. But yeah, I got a pair of pom poms that I signed.
That's actually pretty incredible. You can say that, and you can't. There's no way like you could say no to that when she's pretty much like your cabbage fan, like you know.
Oh. No, they have a sign they would hang up there. They were at the in a suite every single home game. So I was making sure I got them taken care of.
Oh, so they're probably like, they're diehard Panda fans. That's awesome.
Yeah, they came to all the Panda games.
Yeah, like I've had I can't remember who just told me this recently. They were on the bus and like a dad ran into the bus, stuck his phone out there, just started taking a bunch of pictures and then ran out. And everyone's like, who was this guy just jumped in our bus? Took pictures and jumped out. I want to say it was in double A or triple A, but it was just, like you said, fans in, especially because they're like right on you. Like you can hear the chirps, you can hear this, you can hear, hey, can I get a ball? I'm sure you hear that like over under probably like 100 times a game.
If people don't say please, I don't even acknowledge them.
Yeah. And you got to say please.
Correct, you know. Now, the funniest fan story I've got, though, I'll try to make this quick.
Sure.
We drew Royce Lewis in 2017, the Twins did, sorry. We were in Beloit, Wisconsin. There was about 15, we got back to the, like, they rushed him to the bus. They pulled the bus up right to the gate so, like, no fans could really get up there. People followed the bus to the hotel, hopped into their cars really quick. Our manager said, all right, everybody but Royce off. So him and Royce stayed on the bus. Everybody else got off. And, of course, we didn't know what was going on, so we stood there and watched. They drove around the hotel as the fans with the card, like books full of cards, sure, hats and stuff, chased the bus around the hotel. Obviously, the bus got back to the front door really quick. Royce hops off and runs to his room. Wow. But it was hilarious. You got grown people running after a charter bus to get an autograph. It was hilarious.
Yeah, and the last thing we'll talk about is the autograph guys. Like, you know, so many people will come and then grow. And like, I understand kids, you got to grow the game. But when you see a grown man with like a booklet of like 50 cards asking, you know, they're there every single game, the whole homestand, you'll see them like every game. You know, yeah. Oh, it's my first time, you know, like those guys, they have to be frustrating or just irritating.
Yeah. I mean, the way I have a limit, I'll sign three cards. It's just, I just don't go over that. One, because I want to sign for all the kids because the kids are going to enjoy it more, stuff mm-hmm. like that. But like, these cats are buying our cards when we're younger, and if we make something of ourselves and we're big leaguers, they can sell that card and we don't see a cent of it.
Right.
Not all about money or anything, but like, you don't owe those guys anything. Why would I sign 17 of my rookie cards? Like, I'm not, if you make me sign one of them, I'm like, okay, you might actually keep this one. If you sell this one, good on you. But I'm not going to sign 15 and so you can sell 13 of them and make money. It's just like, you know, yeah. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, that's just the way it is. And I there's one guy told me like the way to not get that to happen is just don't ever wear like your jersey. Just put a hoodie on so they can't see your number because they don't know your name. They're just gonna shout, you know, hey 22 or hey 25, whatever it may be. Just you know, wear a hoodie and don't even.
I don't mind a sign for kids as long as like I said, please, they're nice and they not know your name. Mm-hmm. But like, get the guys who come up and like, are you? It was hilarious. I got my beard was longer in spring training. I got Archie Bradley like a half a dozen times, and I was just like, no. But even if I was, I wouldn't sign it because you don't know my name.
Yeah,
you know, because like, they don't know your name and they're trying to like flip through pages. Like, no, buddy, I got better stuff to do with my time. I got to go get ready to play. So.
Yeah, I talked to a guy. He was on the Royals organization maybe 3-4 years ago when Fernando Tatis was in the minors. They were playing them, and you know he's a black gentleman, but he looks light skinned, so they thought he was Dominican as well. So they got all excited. They ran to him and they're like, "Hey, sign this!" And they, "What's my name?" And he just looked at him like, "I don't know." And he's like, "No, I'm not gonna sign your stuff." So he's,
exactly.
That's just the way it is. But I want to thank you for coming on. We'll have to keep in touch. I'll have to have you back on. I can't wait to see you back in the game. Hopefully the rehab goes well and all that, and everything kind of goes smoothly from here out. But I do appreciate you taking the time to come on the pod, man.
Of course. Appreciate it.
Oh,
glad to be here.
Yeah. Before I go, and I got to ask you this. Do you have any interesting Braxton stories that I can kind of poke fun of him the next time I talk to him?
Oh man, I'm trying to think. there's been a couple times I don't know if I can tell some of these. I have to come up with something pretty good, but I know we've got a few. The guy's a goober.
Yeah, he like I said, he's a great guy. But anyway, you have a great rest of the night. Enjoy the All-Star game. I think I just started. I'm gonna pop that on in a second here. But have a great rest of your evening.
Sounds good, man. Have a good one.
All right, appreciate it, brother.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.